The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It is February the 27th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And then a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market. That'll happen with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, a Friday deadline has been set to find ways to pay for new spending to the farm bill. The new president of South Korea is coming to the United States, and that may mean a new free trade agreement. And Bob Deenan says the renewable fuels industry may remain sound. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That'll happen just after the bottom of the hour. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's the way the numbers finished in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon. Futures for the wheat pit at $12.80, up 80 and a half today. The May futures at $12.50, up 35 and a half. And July contract at 11.45, 8.5 cents higher. Corn futures, $5.25, down 5.5. The May down 6 at 5.38. And July at 5.50, down 6.25 for the afternoon. December corn at 5.53.5, down 3 cents. March soybean futures, $14.59, down 7.75. The May at 14.75.25, down 9. And July contract at 14.88.75, down 8.75. November at $14.07, 20 cents lower in the bean pit. March bean meal at 365.90, down 5.30. May bean meal at 373.80, down 5.40. The March oil at 64.47, up 20. The May futures at 65.47, up 44. Fab live cattle at 93.22.5, down 2.5 cents. The April futures down 95 at 94.55. And the feeder cattle traded the March at 105.10, up 32.5 cents. The April futures at 108.20. Up 50 for the afternoon. April lean hogs at $60.97.5, 22.5 higher. And the May futures finished 17 cents higher, 17 and a half higher, rather, at $70.65 a hundredweight. Those are the numbers from the CME Group. Outside markets for the afternoon look like this. The nearby April crude oil futures at $99.60. They finished down $1.28. And the May futures at $99.25 a barrel, down $1.32. The CRB index at 405.55 is up 0.22, and the dollar now at 74.231 is down 0.283 on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average just about 11 points lower at 12,673. Don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated. He's in Kansas City. Here's what the weather forecast looks like from our own Mike Sola. He says a lake effect snow warning is in effect for portions of northern Indiana, that until 5 p.m. Central Time this evening. Now, tonight, the forecast looks like this. In northern Indiana, mostly cloudy skies, some areas of lake effect snow. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy and widely scattered flurries, mainly this evening. Lows will range from about 5 in northern Illinois to 20 in the far southern part of the two-state region. Thursday in northern Indiana, mostly cloudy skies, a few snow showers early in the day. In northern and west central Illinois, mostly cloudy with some snow showers and flurries arriving. In the remainder of central Illinois, some of the sunshine early and then otherwise mostly cloudy, a chance of rain or snow during the afternoon. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy. And highs will range Thursday from 26 in northern Indiana to 50 in the far southern part of Illinois. The extended forecast looks like this. Thursday and Friday, we'll see a return of precipitation to the northern two-thirds of the area. Liquid amounts will be limited to a quarter inch or less, with snow in the north and rain and snow mixes in the central sections. Time now to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural futures here on the Closing Mark Report. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the marketplace, and maybe we should start either with crude oil, which made all-time highs again at one point over the last 24 hours, or we could start in the wheat pit from Minneapolis, where Dave Dickey was talking about some very strange ticks down a long ways and then up the limit.
Yeah. Well, the crude oil was strong overnight, and a couple of things that happened is with this type of environment, there is this feeling in the world that the inflation is right around the corner, and, of course, commodities have been zooming. Crude oil is trading lower at the present time. Bernanke did speak to some of the House Finance Committee today, and the bottom line on CNBC, the quick analyst reaction was that on the next Fed meeting, there'll be a half-point discount rate cut. And a result of that, it makes inflation and the U.S. dollar even weaker, and the cost of crude oil probably a little more expensive. He doesn't paint a very good picture for the U.S. economy, mainly because of the housing problem and the financial problems related to that industry. And they basically, the bottom line, the way I understood it, was we are in a recession right now. Over in the wheat market, we did see some major movement in that commodity. Overnight, we did see a dramatic sell-off. And then the weather guys were talking about some rain and more wheat to export out of the Ukraine and maybe an export sale to Iraq. Margin requirements are being up tonight, and we did see some major price moves. At one time, I think the big move in the July wheat futures were $2.42 from the top to the bottom, $2.15 in the March, and it was very scary. And people in the food industry said as long as the commodity funds have equal status with commercial accounts, you know, the trend, it's going to be quite volatile, and the bull probably has the upper hand right now until there's more production in the world.
That's not all too terribly bad, other than the price of food might rise to some extent across the globe. And maybe it's time that we should have a discussion about the availability of food across the globe and how things might have changed over the last decade, I suppose. And I guess where I'd like to start, and I didn't discuss with this with you earlier, but it seems to me that if you look at the place to start, and let's just take corn, for instance, where in the last decade or 20 years, we've gone from $6 billion a year to $9 billion of production a year to $12 billion of production a year. We've added, gone from about 20% that we've been putting into biofuels for ethanol to, in the projected coming year, about a third. But demand for the export market has not given up. The livestock sector in the Midwest and across the nation seems to be holding strong. There's great demand for a larger supply of the crop, but it appears that there are two growing places. Exports have maintained. I'm going to suggest that that's been a place that has been a growth market. And, of course, we've had biofuels that have grown. And can we pin this on the idea that the United States has made a decision in its energy sector to be more self-reliant? Renewable fuels are the way they've done that so far, and that the Chinese middle class has grown in a way that most in agriculture wanted it to, in terms that it's simply eating more meat, and that this is a good problem as opposed to a bad problem to have.
Well, going on, three points I want to make here. In the 1960s, of course, and 50s, we had this set-aside program. When prices would get cheap, we'd have a set-aside, and when we had a little dry weather or drought or export demands pick up, we'd take the set-aside out. And people from the universities and some of the trade groups said, you know, we were exporting production to South America. we do have this situation now, and I think it's almost 30 million acres of CRP acres in the United States. I could be wrong on that, on the exact amount. But what we're basically looking at here is that the think tank of the guys that know what's going on basically feel we have 6 to 10 million acres of lack of total acres that could go into production to make this mix a little more meaningful and create some price stability here. We are concerned that if we do get corn to $6 to $8 a bushel and wheat up to $25 and soybeans maybe $14 to $20 a bushel, it is going to hurt somebody in the economy. Yes, we can have some $10,000 to $15,000 an acre farmland in central Illinois, and that's going to help Paul Cooley and a lot of other nice people in the state of Illinois a great deal. The big thing is we don't want to destroy our markets, Todd, and it seems like that the answer was basically given that the USDA was optimistic on corn acres at 90 million acres, and I think soybeans at 71 million acres planted this coming year, but it was a good guess. And it was a good guess that we'd have some good weather. But the marketplace doesn't work on guesses. It works on reality. And they're very confused that this basic concept of wanting to encourage more production in South America, Canada, Russia, and every place else in the world instead of here in the United States. And that's sending this basically perplexing idea through the marketplace and through the end users' minds that things just aren't basically adding up to a normal situation, and that's what the market's extremely nervous about today.
USDA, Ed Schaefer, Secretary of Agriculture, said, no, we're not going to open up the CRP. You think they should?
My opinion is that they should do it on a gradual basis, somewhere in the 3 to 5 million this year and 5 to 6 million next year. Do it on an orderly basis and do it on a bid basis and do it orderly. We think that there's going to be about 2 million acres taken out of the CRP this year. If we don't, we are going to encourage massive amounts of production in other places of the world. We could see market share leave the U.S., and we are surprised. Maybe it's the farm bill that has to be taken, passed, but this is a USDA that is losing credibility in the marketplace, and unless some major things change, prices could go substantially higher, and that's what the market's looking at. Even with a record soybean crop in South America, and even with very large wheat plantings in the world, they are taking a big chance, and it's a chance for substantially higher prices, and is the risk worth it? That's the bottom line.
Paul, it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Have a profitable day, and always nice to talk to you.
All right. Paul Cooley, ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Tuesday afternoons.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. A quick reminder, be sure to mark your calendars for March the 4th. That's the date of our all-day Ag Outlook meeting. Next Tuesday, we'll be at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You won't want to miss our nationally acclaimed lineup, including Dan Bossie and Glenn Ring. And we've got sessions on spring weather, estate planning, crop insurance, and corn and soybean basis and futures. Registration for the March 4th event begins at 8:15 Eastern. That's 7:15 Central. Cost is just $13. The 2008 All-Day Ag Outlook meeting is made possible with support from Cargill and the Archer Daniels Midland Company and the Andersons. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take a complete look with us at the agricultural news for the day.
In agricultural news, Democrat congressional leaders have set a Friday deadline to find ways to pay for new spending in the farm bill. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin.
Within a couple of days, we will have a hard number from Mr. Rangel and Mr. Baucus. It will go to the Ag Committee. We will then go to conference and figure out all the lines underneath that. But it will be money that will go to the Ag Committee for us to do our bill.
House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson conceded a bill will not likely be done by March 15th, the date the current extension on the 2002 Farm Bill expires. Last night, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, as well as leading Farm Bill lawmakers, had intensive talks on the Farm Bill. Peterson says, quote, Harry Reid was very direct. Nancy Pelosi wants this done. South Korea's new president will visit the U.S. in April. Lee Myung-bak will reportedly meet with President Bush and other top administration officials. The South Korean Free Trade Agreement and beef import policy are expected to be among the items for discussion. Lee has publicly stated he wants better relations with the U.S. Renewable Fuels Association President Bob Dineen says the ethanol industry remains sound but faces challenges, notably attacks by critics of the industry. Speaking at the RFA annual convention, Dineen also says new energy law will, quote, move ethanol beyond the E10 market. Meanwhile, a public pollster speaking at the RFA convention says most Americans know next to nothing about ethanol. Peter Hart says his survey shows 75% of Americans say energy is an important issue, but 70% have no idea about the ethanol industry. Canada has confirmed a new case of mad cow disease, the 12th since 2003. The cow was born after Canada and the U.S. introduced a ban in 1997 on cattle feed that contained ingredients made from rendered cattle. A Canadian Food Inspection Agency official says the mad cow case probably reflects some residual contamination within the feed system. At least four other Canadian mad cow cases have involved animals born after 1997. And a number of food companies are defying a USDA order to destroy meat produced by Hallmark Westland with the hopes it can be donated or put back in stores. Costco has not destroyed about 400,000 pounds of frozen beef items it has removed from shelves. Food Inspection Service officials say retailers will not be able to sell the meat. Hallmark Westland's handling of downer cattle triggered the largest meat recall in U.S. history. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you can hear those two programs and much more in the way of agricultural radio at our website. It's WILLAG.org. There you can try your hand at a podcast or simply download and listen to the MP3 files. WILLAG.org. It's the website for agriculture. Up next, farmers know that you can control weeds to save yield. I'll have a reminder that during times of very high prices, not dealing with a weed problem in a timely manner can be very, very costly. Weeds compete with the crop for sun and water. That's why it's important to get rid of them early in the season, says University of Illinois weed scientist Aaron Hager. He says farmers who try to save money by delaying an herbicide application to catch more weeds or by lowering the application rate may actually end up costing themselves bushels. This year, more than most, he says, those dollars will add up quickly.
And if we just do simple calculations, let's say of the cost of weed interference on corn yield, we can see obviously at the difference between, let's say, $2 or $2.50 a bushel corn versus what farmers may be actually able to acquire this year in 2007, $4 or $4 plus corn. If you talk simply, you know, something easily, say a 5% yield loss potential. If weeds are allowed to compete too long with the corn crop before they're moved, 5% of 100 bushel is, you know, merely 5 bushel an acre yield loss. You know, at $2 an acre, that's only $10. If you go to $4 an acre, now you're talking a $20 an acre loss.
Here's where the weed specialist gets concerned. Many producers will, for the first time ever, use a glyphosate-resistant corn hybrid. They'll pay extra money for that seed, maybe on the idea that they can save money on the number of trips across the field and/or on the amount of herbicides used. That's not necessarily the case.
Any weed species that emerges with the corn, those typically are your most competitive species and not necessarily the ones that come up 5 or 6 weeks after we plant. So the idea of reducing the cost of weed control inputs in glyphosate-resistant corn many times focuses on the idea, well, instead of using a full rate of a soil residual herbicide, we may reduce the cost by cutting that rate in half. So, for example, many times we think, well, I'll take a, let's say, a $20 an acre herbicide at a full rate and then cut that in half to try to reduce costs. So we'll spend $10 an acre for a soil residual program. If we're late in trying to come in then and clean up any escapes, and these escapes then are enough and significant enough to reduce corn yield loss, it's not going to take many bushels an acre in 2007 to make up that difference of $10 that the farmer tried to reduce his cost down.
It means, says Aaron Hager, that if a farmer tries to reduce input costs by either cutting the rates for soil residual herbicides, not using them at all, and or delaying the glyphosate application to catch a larger number of weeds on the thought of making just one pass, well then, those big weeds will compete for the sun and the water and lower yields. Because those bushels would have been worth more, the cost savings will be eaten up by the crop losses. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is WILL.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. Time to look at the cash grain market very quickly. Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana is with us today. Hi, Kay.
Hi, how are you, Todd?
I'm very well. What'd you make of the trade today?
Well, you know, you hate to say this, but it was kind of a mild day compared to yesterday. At least I thought so anyway. But the wheat seems to be leading the way. And, you know, we had a little sell-off in corn and beans today, and you're just going to see a lot of this yo-yoing back and forth, and because there's nothing really fundamental happening in either market except the wheat market, and it's kind of leading the way, Todd.
And I don't have much time, so I'll just get your bids for you from you this afternoon. How about that?
All right. Cash corn's $5.09, cash beans $14 on the nose, and new crop wheat is $10.15.
And one more question. Do you think farmers should sell corn or soybeans new crop?
No, I think I just kind of, maybe corn, beans, I just sit back and see what happens, watch the fireworks.
Thanks much.
Sure.
That's Kay Whitlock, Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
On this day in agricultural history in 1841, Henry W. Longfellow published his famous poem, The Village Blacksmith. The smith, a mighty man, is he, with large and sinewy hands, and the muscles of his brawny arms are as strong as iron bands. In 1879, saccharin, an artificial sweetener, was discovered by Constantine Fahlberg and Ira Remsen at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland. They discovered saccharin while working on coal tar derivatives. Saccharin is 300 times sweeter than sugar, and for years was found in products as varied as toothpaste, diet soft drinks, ice cream, beauty products, and pharmaceuticals. In 1936, on this date, Ivan Petrovich Pavlov died. Pavlov's work with dogs actually started as a study of digestion. He theorized that digestion was controlled in part by sensory inputs of sight, smell, and taste. Of course, he's best known for his work on conditioned reflex, and he did more than ring a bell. He also experimented with whistles, metronomes, gunshots, and tuning forks. And in 2001, a new outbreak of foot and mouth disease swept across a cattle and sheep farm in Devon, England, raising the fear that the disease had reached mainland Europe. The outbreak of 450 cattle, 1,300 pigs, and 250 sheep vindicated an EU decision to stop all animal movement. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather for the Midwest, please.
Well, it still looks like winter is not going to give up the ghost here real quickly. We still have another surge of cold air coming through the region. It's not going to be quite as potent as the one we just are experiencing right now, but it will reinforce the cooler bias, and it will bring another shot of snowfall across parts of the region. This will take place as we go night Thursday, day on Friday. I imagine we'll probably pick up 1 to 3 inches of snowfall in parts of the Midwest. Our temperatures then behind that system will be reinforced on the cool side, but only briefly. We are expecting a warming trend to take place during the course of the weekend, and that should help to make us feel a little bit better, but enjoy it while you can. It's a short-time fix. We do expect another storm system to come across the plains and into the Midwest as we go into next week. This storm system has potential to produce some severe thunderstorms, and a lot of those will probably occur in the lower parts of the Midwest, more likely in the Delta and the interior southeastern states. So there could be some very heavy rainfall associated with some of those storms. We'll look for that to occur Sunday into Monday. And then there'll be another shot of cool air that comes behind that line of storms with yet another opportunity for some snow to develop as we go into the latter part of next week and a new surge of bitter cold air drops southward out of Canada. So yeah, spring's just not going to get here too quickly. It doesn't look...
It sure sounds like it'll be a rough start, maybe to the severe weather season, too, with spring kind of holding out, but little shots of air and warmer air starting thunderstorms and such that could be pretty rocky next week. What about the rest of the planet? What do they look like?
Well, down in South America, it looks as though the pattern in Brazil is less than desirable for some producers who are trying to get some of that early harvesting completed. The weather in Brazil is actually a little bit better than what was predicted to be earlier this week, but that doesn't mean it's ideal. We still have a lot of rain falling around in parts of the country, and that is going to eventually create an environment that will be a little bit more of a concern for the marketplace. But I don't think we're going to be just so persistently wet that we're really going to do damage to the crop. I think it's just going to be a matter of delaying that harvest process for a little while. In Argentina, the outlook continues looking very good. The crops in that country keep getting timely precipitation events. We have some pockets of dryness there, but nothing that stands out as being a viable threat to the overall production. So the situation there looks pretty darn good. India still is pretty dry, but we've learned this past week that 88% of their wheat crop is irrigated, and that translates into a pretty minor impact by the dryness that's been prevailing recently. And in China, it still looks pretty good to me that their wheat crop and rapeseed are going to end up doing relatively well this year. I know there's been a lot of rumor out there about damage done because of their harsh winter conditions, but I'm fighting that one. I just don't think that there's been all that much damage over there, and I think their wheat and rapeseed are poised for some pretty significant development as we get into the spring, warmer days of spring.
Andrew, we appreciate you being with us for the day.
Thank you, and you have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.